It just feels like I'm supposed to do something, but I don't know what.
That's normal. It's a big world, and there's so much you haven't seen yet.
Because you won't show me.
It's about the order of things, the order you learn. When you were young, we let you be wild, because wildness is important. But as you got older, we gave you structure, so you'd feel safe.
I can take care of myself.
Here's something. The secret of life. If you feel safe when you're young, you will feel safe when you're old.
I feel safe.
And we want that feeling to last. You're not old yet.
Yes, I am.
No. You have your whole life to be old. But today you're still young. Trust me. You're doing this right. We have to learn about love before we can learn about hate. Otherwise, everything goes to hell.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And I'm Aaron.
And this is the Legion Podcast, episode 25. This week, it's our top three highlights for season 3, episode 6, chapter 25. What did you guys think?
Two thumbs up.
Did you love it or did you like it?
I mean, it took me a while. I had to kind of sit on it. And for a long time, I sat there not knowing what was happening, much less knowing if I liked it or not. But once it was over and, you know, it all kind of wrapped up, then I realized, you know, how much I liked it. I wasn't sure if I was going to, you know, being an, usually the Sid-centric episodes I like, I really loved the one from season 2. When in the maze, when David went to like figure her out. So I really enjoyed that one. So I wasn't sure about this one, but I really enjoyed it. I love how everything kind of came together and I thought it was a beautiful setting on top of it. So yeah, liked it.
Aaron.
I kind of agree with Rima that a lot of this episode I was sitting and being like, okay, where is this going? And I wasn't sure if they were like trying to tell me, I wasn't sure exactly what story they were actually telling for a while. And then when it became clear that they're telling the story of, you know, Oliver and Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
Bird, kind of like guiding Sid's consciousness or soul back to its body after David had ripped it out. I thought, okay, that's actually an interesting way to handle this, because, you know, we've often remarked that Sid seems like a very different character in her future self than she did in like her present self.
Mm.
I think this goes a long way to explaining that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a more conscientious and deliberately heroic character, and you can see from the way she was raised by Melanie and Oliver that was kind of intentional. And, you know, like this show continues to get away with things that it shouldn't. This rap battle shouldn't have worked. In fact, it's actually pretty lame. It's pretty lame dad rap, if we're going to be honest. But that's kind of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's nothing but a story. It's nothing but trying to dramatize some kind of psychological mental battle on the astral plane. And it works. Like if you're along for the ride this far, you're not going to be like, bullshit, I'm out on this.
Right.
One. So,
exactly.
They're just pushing that edge a little bit further. If we'd seen this in episode 2, it might be like,
right. Well. Holly's like, I got a 0.2 share. Fuck it. I'm just going to.
Yep.
So I liked it. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I liked it. I it wasn't my favorite on first watch, but second watch. And saying it wasn't my favorite doesn't mean I didn't like it. It's just, you know, it wasn't my favorite, but I did like it, and I liked it more on second watch. And I think, yeah, that was sort of Jemaine Clement's swan song to do a Flight of the Conchords style rap, which made it even more fun. I mean, have you seen that show, Aaron?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen What We Do in the Dark or any other cool. I'm criminally underexposed to Mr. Clement. Like, the one thing I've seen him in is Moana, when he plays a really cool, fabulous crap for like 5 minutes.
I wonder, yeah, I don't know you well enough to know if you would like Flight of the Conchord, but it's really silly but creative and fun, and I think you might like it.
Jim's seen it and he likes it, so that's a pretty good indicator. Okay. We have pretty finally the same tune. Not finally a tune, finally same tune sense of humor, so.
I thought this episode in some ways felt kind of like an expanded version of these John Hamm vignettes that we got in season 2, because it felt a bit lesson-like. Like, here's all these issues around parenting and what can go wrong, and here's how you do it right, and, you know, the psychological implications of both paths. And it got a little, maybe a little too lesson-y for me at times, but I still enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed thinking about it afterwards. So, yeah, I give it a thumbs up. All right, let's get into our top three. Why don't we have Aaron go first this time?
Oh boy! Just for fun. This is the one. This is the one where it's like, this is a challenging format.
It is.
Me,
I know.
In the best of cases, yep. But now, okay. Let me say that I really liked the entirety of the Big Bad Wolf performance by Jason Manzoukas.
I would say Manzoukas, but that's okay. A guess. Yeah.
Because I've got that condition where I can't remember people's names, and when the names have like more than two syllables, it's terrible.
It's hopeless.
But I read a review that said that he would make a good Disney villain, and that's what this felt like. Like, you know, that second run of Golden Age classics, like, he would fit right in there with Scar and Jafar and, you know, in the Disney evil kind of, but not too evil, like, you know, flamboyant and scary, but not too scary. But then... you know, that scene of like when Cynthia was gesturing down the alley where they live and he's standing there in the gateway of hell. It's like, okay, this, you know, that now that Sid's grown up a little bit, he's presenting himself as a little scarier. It's everything about he was like kind of cute and cuddly Big Bad Wolf when Cynthia was a little girl and he grew up to a genuine menace. And I just thought, I always think of him as a really goofy dude. And I don't never really taken him serious as a dramatic actor, really. And this kind of let me see him in a new light.
Yeah, I liked that he played it almost somewhat understated, because he definitely looked like a Disney villain. But the way he came off a lot of the times, except for when it was really presenting as dark, like you said, was just kind of like a dude that's into some kind of sleazy stuff. And I definitely have some friends that are very similar to that.
Sure.
And you know, it's like, sometimes you want to hear about it. Like, that's the whole point, is that some of this stuff can actually be kind of, appealing or, tempting to, you know, get involved with. I mean, I guess not really. None of the stuff he was saying, like, I don't want to get involved with chlamydia or anything, but it's just the way he comes off is sort of like, not like muhaha, but more like, hey, you know, what do you think about this?
What do you guys think he actually represented?
I think that he represented knowledge of things that you're not ready to learn as a kid, and temptations and things like that. And that, you know, Oliver says regarding against knowledge. So it's knowledge of things in the real world before the child is equipped and ready to handle them.
Yeah, it did seem like there was a little satanic imagery. Like, I thought when I first saw the heart laying on the street, I actually thought it was an apple. And, you know, that's the whole myth of Adam and Eve, is that the devil gave them the knowledge between good and bad. And I felt like that, like, a lot of the knowledge he was offering was not necessarily bad or evil. It was just like, you know, painful adult truths and representing, like, you know, cynicism, because I think that's the difference between, like, people being cynics and optimist is, like, you know, if you hear all the bad things about the world and you're like, well, that's it, why bother try, then you fall in the cynical camp. And if you are like, despite all that, something inspiring about the fact that people still try and still try to be good, then you fall in the optimist camp. And that was Melanie and Oliver trying to keep her on that optimist path, and you know, shield her in a way that she wasn't shielded, you know, in her real growing up, so she can keep that heroic streak about her. I thought that was and it's like, it's not like she was not heroic before, but There's definitely some kind of change in her character, though.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they even say it at the end. You seem different.
And yeah, it's mm-hmm. hard to put your finger on. It's yeah. not just her hair. It's something like, you know, like there was a reluctant heroism, or and now it's more of like a altruistic paladin type of right. good now. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, I question how much of what happened to her was about replacing the parenting she already got, and how much was just about repairing her after what David did to her. I think it was kind of both.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right, Rima, what's your number three?
Just an extension of what Aaron was talking about with the big bad wolf is just the new visit to the astral plane that we got this season. Instead of it being like this cold igloo or ice cube that we've kind of seen before when we would go visit, you know, Oliver, when David kind of met up with him the first time, or when Sid was there and she was in that igloo, and just other representations. I thought this was just a nice, calm kind of fairy tale kind of imagery that we had. I think it was peaceful and serene, with the exception of the wolf, of course. But I think that even, you know, I admit getting kind of lost at first, thinking, well, you know, we're going through this whole fairy tale and the big bad wolf and the three little pigs kind of storyline. I was kind of confused, but I think it ended up working. But I thought it was kind of cool. You know, you see Oliver, you know, meandering about and, you know, collecting things in his little red wagon, and, you know, and finding out that this is the place where things are that are forgotten about. And then to find that Sid has been taken there because she's, you know, kind of had her mind lost, and that she, and I was kind of confused at first why she was a baby, why she wasn't like her adult self. But I think as the story went along, that kind of made more sense. But I just kind of thought that was interesting. So,
I mean, I think partly that might be because of what David did to her, reduced her to that state. But what else, what other things do you have in mind about why she was a baby?
Well, I don't. Okay. I don't really have any insight or clarity as to why she was. I was kind of confused by that at first. I'm like, well, why would she be a baby? And I'm like, well, okay, so, you know, I guess maybe she needed, like you said, needed to be. She needed to kind of start
the plot
over.
Demands it. I kind of felt like that a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like she is because she has to be, I guess. It's because that's what we're supposed to do or have here. So, you know, I've learned with this show not to, it's like what you guys were talking about with the rap. It's like you just get to a point with the show where you just stop asking questions and you just let it be. So, you know, I still, because I'm curious and I have questions, they still come to mind, but in the end I'm kind of like, I don't really care. It's, you know, it's Legion. It just kind of is what it is, and I just let it be what it is without trying to make it what I think it should be. But I just love how they kind of let Noah Hawley just do what he wants, creatively speaking, and just kind of let him put all of that out there. I know that he doesn't direct all of them, but, you know, the directors take his vision and put it on the screen. So I feel like this does come from him. And I'm so going to miss this show when it's over. We only have a couple episodes left. And to not have something as visually pleasing as this show and just the creativity, it really feeds something in me, I guess, because I'm not such a creative person myself, and I wish that I was. So to see that from someone else was just really nice, and I liked, and the fact that they created it out of like this little spot that Melanie and Oliver chose for themselves came from like this flower pot mm-hmm. in the middle of the city was, you know, it's like,
I still don't really
choose.
Get that. I don't understand.
Yeah, I feel like so they first lived in a flower box, then they lived in a drop of rain, maybe.
Okay,
and then the gutter. Moved in this city, so like there's probably a rich vein of allegory to mine there, but I was trying to try. It's one of those
fable like.
Okay, yeah, it is. It's mm-hmm. very, you know, like you arrive at the ball in a carriage made out of a pumpkin kind mm-hmm. of thing.
Exactly, and I yeah. really think you mentioned that you like the kind of the feel of the fableness of it, you know. And I think that's a metaphor for when, you know, this whole episode kind of espouses this view of the healthiest way to raise a child, which is, you know, the order of things is important. So when they're, you know, you need to kind of protect them from things and let them give them knowledge when they're ready for it, but not before. And so the fable-like quality is, she says at some point, we're trying to raise our baby in a world of magic and wonder. And so it's like, and you see that with parents too. They're mm-hmm. kind of enriching their kids' fantasy lives, but protecting them from the harsh truths of the world and things like that. But as far as like whether it makes sense, I think the first priority of this episode was let's show Melanie and Oliver helping Sid get back to, you know, fighting stance where she needs to be the hero of the story. At least that's what I think. And also do a metaphor about raising children. And so those are the two things that had to be right for Noah Hawley, I believe. And then all the logistics and everything else, you kind of have to do some leaps to make it fit into the whole mutant narrative or whatever.
So is this so to kind of develop that point a little bit more, did Melanie and Oliver bail to the astral plane last season to await, like, did they have some kind of inkling that this was like some sort of destiny for them? And then the follow up on that is them helping Sid rediscover herself. Did that also help them discover themselves too? Because they reverted back to their like true forms at the end, but yet are unwilling to come back to the real world to help. I was puzzled by that because I thought that was what was building.
The unwillingness to come back does fit in with what we saw of them before, which the last time we saw them, they were in the astral plane and talking about how great it was and that they loved it and that their bodies were safe. And I actually have a clip of that just to kind of refresh us because I feel like it has bearing on the story. It's a couple minutes long, but I'm going to play it. So here we go.
It's not much. It's a bit drippy sometimes, isn't it? But we're happy.
Cube, sweet cube.
We've been here for about an hour. No. What's the word?
Soup?
No, I don't think it's soup. We've been here longer than that. Anywho. Oh, what happened? Well, the world ended.
Oh, sweetheart, don't be so dramatic. It didn't end. It's still out there.
I'm exaggerating. She has to what
sunrise, I do. Sunrise, sunset, you know, everybody toiling away.
Toil.
You know, good versus evil, all that sort of thing. We just don't do that sort of thing anymore.
No. We were just losing too much hair.
Time.
It was time that we were losing. My beloved and I. Groom and bride. Our bodies. What do we do with our bodies?
They're safe. Somewhere. They're hidden.
To tell you the location would be ungenious.
It's actually better without them. Mm. You know, all those aches and pains and aging.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention various gases.
We miss them, friends.
We miss people, of course. Our co-workers, like, of course, Glasses McLabcoat and the girl who would kick everyone. Yeah. I miss her.
Oh, and Sydney. Don't forget Sydney.
I have forgotten Sydney.
What happened to her was so sad.
Very sad. What was it that happened to her again?
The betrayal.
She was betrayed.
After the fight with Farouk, when David...
The turn. There was a great battle with... What's-his-face?
Farouk.
Farouk. A very soothing voice, I found. Very hypnotic.
Mm.
I remember helping him.
Yes, I do too.
Why did he turn again, this David person?
Because she showed him his future.
So that's it. One thing about that too, I forgot to mention, there's a title card at the beginning that says 3 years later. So just hearing that and watching it again, it's not totally clear to me that they actually did go there of their own accord, because at the end they're like, oh, we helped him. They don't remember anything. And, you know,
right.
It could be a trap.
You screwed me over there because I thought I had an interesting theory until you said the 3 years later, because I was thinking, oh, because you can already see some hints about them, you know, they had a plan, maybe they're manipulated into it, but they've started to lose the plot and details, like, you know, they remember some people, but they did remember Sydney, and I'm like, oh, that kind of tracks, but... Yeah, I guess I'm super confused about, because what I remember clearly thinking at the end of season two that the Shadow King had somehow pulled a con to get them these two powerful people off the board. You know, this is the culmination of the delusion that he put in Melanie's head.
Well, it seems now, they are there now too, though. So just because that was 3 years later doesn't mean that they weren't placed there earlier. Because right now, Sydney's, I mean, who knows how time in the astral plane correlates with the physical world, but Sydney's,
that's true.
You know what I mean? She's just now gotten her mind flayed, and then she ends up there, and there they are.
I think that she was in the astral plane for, like, nearly a lifetime, but it was only 20 minutes from the time that David, like, when they swapped bodies.
Right. Yeah, but my question is, if we're trying to figure out when the when they first went there... is it right now within the context of the show? And I think it is, because for one thing, they're not there in the physical world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was interesting that to me to hear that, because, well, for a bunch of different reasons, but one is that he asks why David turned, and she says because she showed him his future, which is something that we've talked about, like, maybe that was sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. But that's getting us away from this episode. I just thought it would be like, can I go into my number three? Are you guys ready for it?
Mm-hmm. Please.
So I was wondering how that, we knew they ended up there, and how that squares with what we saw in this episode. They're on the astroplane, or in or on, in both, but now they're this quaint fairy tale couple, and they don't seem to have any awareness that that's just not their natural state. They just are going about their lives. When they find baby Sydney, and they say she seems familiar, but they're not sure. So I guess that squares with them just being kind of foggy about everything. But then at the very end, when Oliver does the rap battle and he's back in his leisure suit, and Melanie sees him, and then she's in her regular clothes, then she seems to wake up and realize, okay, this whole thing that we were just doing, this whole fable thing, was just for the purpose of helping out Sid, and now we can go back to what we were doing before. That's what it seemed like.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like, they're going for this, the, you know, the kind of, like, fairly tropey observation of a parenthood, which is you kind of rediscover yourself through watching your children grow up. And I wondered if they were just really leaning into that metaphor to, like, these are... all three characters who are like, have some kind of intrinsic goodness, but also have lost a little piece of themselves along the way, are kind of going through this voyage of discovery together. And maybe, you know, Melanie and Oliver know a thing or two more than Sid, because they've been on the astral plane long enough, but like, it's, they kind of recall their purpose by helping her recall her. So it's like, it's almost like this, like, evolutionary process, that it's like this random consciousness was found by this random kind of psychic wanderer, and he decides kind of on a whim to bring it to the hut, and, you know, wouldn't it be nice to kind of raise it, and everything kind of comes together as it comes together, is what I intuit. But, you know, you're not going to find that in the script, I don't think.
Right. Yeah. And it's engineered to have us talking about different possibilities and not knowing which one is right, I think.
Right. But like, even like when you said the 3 years later, and then the astral, you can live, you know, 16 years and 20 minutes. It's like,
right.
What does 3 years later mean? Are those astral time minutes, or those dog years? What's going on?
Exactly. And then as far as what we learned about the astral plane, they made up some new rules that it's a magnet for lost dreams. And he goes, minds. That was the other thing we found in the real world. When people lost their minds, they ended up here. So that kind of explains both how Melanie and Oliver, they kind of, in a sense, lost their minds because their minds are not attached to their bodies anymore, I guess. And Melanie lost her mind because of what David did to her. And just as a reminder, last time we saw her, her consciousness was inside David's body, and she met all his legion of personalities, and they dragged her back into this dark space screaming. And then in the physical world, we see that David touching her and his mind had returned to his own body and she's just like laying there frozen with her eyes open. So
you said Melanie.
I'm sorry. Okay. God, I just want to make it a little more confusing for everyone. Okay.
maybe that's the version of Legion they showed on the West Coast, just to screw with us.
Yeah, I would have put it past them.
Wouldn't it be funny if Noah Hawley did do that? Like every time zone, he showed a slightly different Legion just to watch the chaos on the internet.
I wouldn't put it past him. We've been getting some more trippy emails. I don't know how much we're supposed to allow to go into that, but what else?
But you know, David, though, when he met, when we were like fully introduced to Oliver in season one, and David, you know, was in the ice cube with him, that was because David kind of lost it too. That was when Farouk really kind of took him over and pushed David out.
Yeah,
that's how he encountered him. And you know, and I don't know, never fully explained how Oliver just kind of ended up there. It's like because he kept going there.
Yeah.
And then he just never came back. He became addicted to it,
I think is what they said. Yeah.
And he just never came back and got lost. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, even though it wasn't explicit in all of those tales, it was here, you know, minds being lost. So, I think it's a little bit consistent.
Yeah, that's good. The last thing, just since it's my point is about Melanie and Oliver, I'm glad that they're here, that they're in an episode, that they didn't just disappear, because I like the two actors and the two characters, and it was fun to see them have a different spin on it. But they were still their kind of quirky, cute selves. Like, I like when Melanie invites this girl, Cynthia, in, and Oliver pushes the wolf out, and he's like, sorry, as he's doing it, and then the wolf growls, rawr, and he's all, listen, don't be mad. Just like a very Oliver way of responding to your enemy. And then they're using the wrong words for things like they used to, and I already mentioned it, but the rap battle at the end was a nice way. I feel like that's probably Jemaine Clement's last scene, so why not have him do something that he's known for?
Heck yeah.
Okay, Aaron, number two.
I thought there were some really sweet things, like a general kind of parenting philosophy that is like, I don't know if anyone can live up to this fully, but there's and some of the things he was saying to like young Sid about there being this kind of the secret to life is that, you know, when you were young and you're wild, we let you be wild. But as you got older, we provided order so you'd feel safe. And if you're safe when you're young, you'll feel safe when you're old. And that gives you an environment where it's conducive that you can learn about love. And it's important that you learn about love before you learn about hate. And the answer to why they built the stone wall, it's like, you know, your mom and I taught you to work hard so that you'd be able to work hard. We taught you to ask questions so that you could ask questions. There's just, I don't know. It's like, I felt like it was a really cool way to express kind of like how to raise a person who's able to bring value to their community. And there's a lot of intention there, and obviously a lot of love. And I thought it was really sweet. And I thought that Jermaine and Jean Smart made really, really cute, secure and stable parental figures.
As a parent, do you agree with everything?
I mean, I'm kind of up in the air about how I feel about them associating with unsupervised around a big bad wolf, but I don't know because it's weird, because it's, you know, it is like fairy tale, and the thing is like I had a lot of high minded noble sentiments of how I was going to parent when, you know, Jack was one month old.
Yeah.
And I've tried to keep to that. I've kept a lot of the promises I made to myself, but there's, you know, a couple that I've broken over the years, because parenting, they don't show any of the frustrations of parenting, and they don't show you all the times that a child's going to like make small steps towards like the Cynthia path, and like how scary and gripped up you can get over that kind of stuff. Because, you know, these characters are in, they only live 45 minutes at a time on television, so they don't, you know, they have infinite patience. And broad strokes, I thought this was a pretty nice parental ethos. What about you?
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, almost totally. I the only part where I question, and I think anytime you're talking about parenting, it's going to raise your hackles a little bit because everyone has a different ideas about parenting.
And very strong ideas.
Yeah, but I do agree with almost all of it, that it's my job to give structure and guidance and protection and support and love and keep introduce things to my kids when they're ready for it and when it would serve them and challenge them and not before. But probably, you know, actually this is probably a failing of mine, but I think I show them things too early. Like, that's one reason why, this is maybe TMI for people, but I guess I'm kind of famous for that at this point. But my 2.5-year-old Bodhi is now known as the hitter at daycare. And I think it's just because I showed him too damn much Spider-Man cartoons. So I guess, yeah, this isn't me saying I disagree with it. It's just me saying I'm not doing a very good job at it. I mean, but that's just, you know, superhero cartoons. It's not like I'm explaining chlamydia to him or anything like that.
Say what you will about the hitter, he's not gonna get gonorrhea when he grows up.
There's a dark side and a light side to everything.
It's like all the cartoons I grew up with had those little moral lessons at the end, you know, so they can sneak under the fair broadcasting standard or whatever. It's like, imagine, hey, kids, make sure you wear a condom if you're...
Watch out for VD. Okay. Yeah. Rima, number two.
Oh, gosh. Well, just kind of expanding on what you guys were just talking about, and a, you know, theme that we've had, I feel, since the beginning that Noah Hawley keeps reminding us of in the series is the nature versus nurture. And I think that, you know, this episode was... you know, shining a bright light on that, which again tells us, or at least is supposed to, I think, show us that with the right upbringing and structure, it can shape people into the right kind of people. I don't know if that's true or not, but I feel like that's what we're being
shown. That's the theme, huh? The importance of parenting.
Yeah.
Good parenting.
And how good parenting can really shape people. And, you know, we've been shown a lot how David was left, how he felt abandoned by his real parents. He said it multiple times, even before we met his real parents in this season. You know, he would always say, why did they get rid of me? What was wrong with me? He would always say, what was wrong with me? Why was I not loved? And then even his adoptive parents and even Amy, his sister, couldn't help him the way that he needed to be helped. They didn't know about Farouk and him messing with his mind. I don't know that they were well equipped to deal with his mental illness, and he ended up being locked up in Clockworks. And then on the other side, we've seen how Sid was raised and how she wasn't, I wouldn't think anyway, in my opinion, not really nurtured in the way that she needed to be. And she was closed off with her powers kind of making her that way. She was disconnected from people and not able to feel like she should have. And I think that her mom, you know, was kind of a little bit of a narcissist and not able to really give her what she needed. And
she wasn't horrible, right? At least
no,
from what we
she
saw.
Wasn't.
But yeah, right. Like she had her bound up in the mental institution pretty early on, but who knows what. So yeah, I agree with you. I'm just saying I like it that it's not just like, oh, she had this evil stepmother or something like that. It was just like, yeah, she tried, but maybe it wasn't exactly what Sid needed.
Yeah, I don't think it was what she needed. I mean, she was, and I don't know that it was clear whether she admitted herself, whether her mother wanted her to go there, but we know that she was there for, what, an antisocial disorder. You know, so I think that it was interesting in how they were trying to teach in, you know, in this episode about making decisions from love and not fear. And I think that we see so much of that in this series and with David making choices out of fear and not love. So I just thought this was an interesting take on it. And I think it was really well done.
Yeah.
Like I said, it took me a while to kind of figure out what was happening. And then by the end, it was kind of like, oh,
nice.
That was the whole point of all of these lessons.
You know, thinking about it now too, it's a really positive episode. I mean, that she needed help. They wanted to help her. There were some challenges there with the wolf, but he failed. And there's one tragic figure, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. But for Sydney, it was just a positive. It's nice to have an episode of TV that's mostly positive and interesting in that way.
Absolutely.
Occasionally. I mean, it would get boring if it was every week, but...
Well, it's a nice departure from David slaughtering pretty much everybody with a snap of his fingers, and you got dead corpses singing outside in space, and, you know, it's a nice little...
But, nice little which turn. I love. But, you know...
Well, I did too.
Like, Sid... She got this sort of the mutant version of nice, healthy child rearing. And that's kind of what David is trying to get for himself. He's trying to go back in time and take the Shadow King out of him so that he'll get raised better. He'll have a better childhood and then become a better adult who can fix things. And that's even the same. I mean, Melanie told Sydney, you can, you know, all these bad things don't have to be bad. You can fix them. Using, I don't think it's an accident that she used that word, because it's right. A parallel to what David is wanting. And it makes me think it would be interesting if, what if David's mind had been the one that had gone back and gotten raised by Oliver and Melanie.
Well, it shows the difference between like something therapeutic that comes from within and something where you're changing yourself for the better versus someone that's trying to control things that might hurt them and, you know, does that, you know, to chilling effect on the people around them. Because, yeah, I mean, that's been one of, I think, Legion's kind of areas of concern is, like, you know, mental health and how do we perceive it and how seriously we take it. And this is showing, you know, a kind of roundabout way, because, like, you know, Melanie and Oliver can be thought of as parental figures, but they can also kind of be thought of as like a talk therapist, right? You know, like, it's how are you feeling, we can't read your mind, use your words, like, those are this is how we communicate to each, like, it's also very foundational, kind of like basic therapy work too that's being shown here.
Oh, this astral plane episode was like the perfect therapy, you know, not just for Sid, but I mean, can you imagine if David had the same type
of
experience?
What I'm saying,
you know,
and for all of us too.
And I mean, it kind of mirrors like what Sydney was telling David, I think it was back in season one, when she says, who teaches us to be normal when we're one of a kind? And that, you know, it shows good parenting, meaning good parents, and kind of doing what Melanie and Oliver did in this episode for Sydney.
I mean, if Bodhi was a mutant, that would make it even a lot harder.
He's shooting lasers from his eyes. And
that would make it a lot harder.
And he's chasing the cat.
Oh, shit. I'd be dead. Okay, my turn, right? So, number two, Cynthia. Cynthia is an example, is like this counterexample of someone who didn't have parents there to protect her. And the wolf says, I found her wandering alone in the woods. She's lost her innocence, which is a win for this guy. And I thought the actress was really good, because she seemed to really straddle that line between being really innocent and wide-eyed, but she already had lost her innocence, and she was very impressionable and attracted to these seductive ideas and things, but also attracted to the stability of home, of a stable home with the stability of the stable home with Oliver and Melanie. And so it was interesting to see her, the kind of a tug of war with her, like a tug of war for her soul. And then at the end, Sid tells her, I know you had a bad deal. You think you don't deserve things, love. That's like David. He doesn't feel like he deserves love. And so maybe this is a lesson for Sid, you know, because Cynthia chose to stay with the wolf, that not everyone wants to be saved. And maybe that's trying to teach her that there could be a time to give up on David. I mean, she already has, though. But anyway, I just found a parallel between Cynthia and David. And that's my number two.
You know, she was, Cynthia was one of David's Manson girls.
Oh, really? Okay. Uh-huh. So is her mind, that's okay. I was wondering if she correlated with someone in the real world or was just this character they made up. So apparently when David probably vaporized her, she ended up there, huh?
Either that or it had to do with the drugs.
Interesting. I didn't, because I wondered about that, and I was going to look it up on IMDb, and then I got distracted by Shiny Ball. So, that's interesting.
Okay, number one. Aaron.
I want to continue developing your idea that you just talked about in number two, because I think what we saw here is essentially the finale of Legion, in a practice. Like, Sid has got this, because like what you just said about her of already kind of rejecting or giving up on David, but it came from a place of like hurt and like anger, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Versus giving up on someone out of a sense of, you know, acceptance
or self-preservation.
Yeah, that like there's some people that are going to make bad choices, and you know,
can't take responsibility for everyone else.
You can't
in the world.
You make the attempt to save them, but you know, ultimately some people don't want to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like this experience you had with the wolf and Cynthia at the end is both to teach her that, you know, you do have to try to save the people. But you know, you can also let them go. And I can really see her like trying to make one last pitch to David, like, you know, you don't have to go back in time. I used to think that, like, you know, I would never be able to blah blah blah, but then I had this experience with Mel, and you know, David ultimately probably rejecting it, and then she has to do what she has to do. But there's that, and like the whole last like 15 minutes of this is ultimately kind of a hopeful you know, kind of setting up the penultimate and ultimate episodes, finale episodes of Legion, because you also, you know, I can't be the only one that thought Carrie was going to sacrifice herself to buy Sid and the mail outer milk, the few seconds they need to get into the dimension right. before the time demons catch. But she's victorious and she's able to join. And that's kind of like the first win this team has had in a long while. And she's like, I think we're going to win. And that's kind of like the first kind of really positive
triumphant
note that we've
moment.
Had on. Yeah. Triumph of like actual a good guy, a good mm-hmm. person that we've seen in a while. So I'm starting to feel good. Like I don't know about David, whether he dies the hero or has to be, you know, eliminated as a villain. But I, you know, overall, like the universe of Legion, I think is in much better hands at the end of this episode than it has been at any other point in the series history.
We might not be left feeling like shit after the final episode. Now, Noah Hawley's had three TV series endings with Fargo seasons 1 through 3. And God, I don't remember any of them, but do you guys, and without spoiling anything, if you do, based on that, do you feel like we're in good hands for Legion?
Yeah, I think
I think so.
The worst you get is bittersweet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
There's always like things that come to an end and lives that are lost, but there's also new beginnings and, mm-hmm. you know, hopeful like new families being forged out of, you know, loss and things like that. So, yeah, I think he's more of an optimist than he's definitely more of an optimist than like a, you know, like a Quentin Tarantino type.
Yeah.
Who's just fine blowing everything up.
Right. I mean, right. I think that's the difference between Tarantino's parents and Howley's probably.
Needed some more time on the astral plane.
I don't know. I mean, I do worry. I'm in agreement. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a bittersweet type thing. Because he pushes it so hard that this is a tragedy. So I can't shake that there is going to be some tragedy here.
Sure.
But
bittersweet.
I think it is going to be more of a bittersweet. Like there's going to be some tragedy, but there's going to be some hopefulness at the same time. So I don't know how it's going to end. I can't even begin to fathom to guess, because I wouldn't have guessed that this was, you know, how Sydney, you know, because they kept saying Sydney's going to be the hero. And I don't know that I truly believe that she's the hero at this point. And I feel like this should really be David's story. I wish we could get a little bit more of realization for him and not so much for Sid.
Well, she's the Jesse Pinkman of this, because you need someone to feel, you know, to start identifying with when your hero goes bad.
Yeah. Sure. And I mean, and I know David, I don't like calling him a villain. I think of him more as the anti-hero. I don't know that he's gone full villain just yet, but
when all your friends are vaporized around you, then get back to me.
It's not a good look. I know that, but just
he has a time traveler. Okay, what's your number one, Rima?
Well, to kind of expand exactly what you guys were just saying is the lessons that were learned, and that was for Sydney learning that you can try to save someone even if they don't want to be saved. And you don't know really unless you try. And I feel like she wasn't trying. Like she was like this, what we've seen of her so far is like she just comes in blasting with a shotgun.
She's not trying at all. She's trying to kill him. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm saying she's like no explanations, no going back or trying to go for treatment or trying to help David. We're just going to take him out. And that's all that we've seen of her so far. So to kind of see her turn that like now, you know, there seems to be, you know, when Carrie was saying, you know, there's something different about you, there did seem to be this calm and peaceful resolve on her face that she just, and very determined, like she knows now, like something clicked in her head, like she knows now what to do. And now she knows that she has to at least try to save David. And I think that she's learned that even if you try, that you don't always win. The good guys don't always win. And I think that she's prepared for that. And I think it was interesting how they also pointed out when Melanie said it's not them and us, it's or them or
it's
us,
not
it's
us
them
and
us.
Yeah, it's not.
Right.
Yeah, us or them. It's us and them. Yeah, right. I love that. But I wonder, it seems like every word counts. So that should somehow play out in the next two episodes, right?
Yeah, that's my thought, too.
Well, and I like how they didn't just have this switch in this realization for her come out of nowhere. This actually felt earned. I know a lot of people, I read some negativity about this episode and I see that side of things. And I know I was confused too for like the first 30 to 40 minutes of the entire episode of what are they trying to say here and what's the purpose of all of this. And it wasn't until later that it made sense. And I felt like
design.
I had that little click. Yeah, felt like I had that click, but it felt earned. Like, we're not just going to have this, you know, Sydney going from where we saw her from season 2 and here in season 3 up to this point. And then all of a sudden she has a switch into being some type of hero. This felt more earned and I liked that.
Yeah. Maybe she'll approach it. Yeah. In a healthier way. Cause I still feel, I hope that they acknowledge that the Shadow King was in there mucking around with things and manipulating and trying to convince people of things. And, you know, that affected the way things played out. And you're right. This whole season, Melanie's just trying to assassinate David and try to trick him and not
Sydney.
At all. Sydney, Jiminy, Christmas. And so anyway, Melanie's on the astral plane having a great time. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe now that she's in a healthier mindset that she can approach him from a more holistic point of view or something.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, she got a taste of what it was like in the astral plane. You know, Big Bad Wolf is in there trying to screw things up and mess things up, kind of like Farouk did with David.
Right.
So she got a little bit of a taste of that and a little bit of understanding what it was like for David, that maybe that's what helped some of that empathy. And it was interesting to know that how, you know, her whole power was being able to inhabit and switch bodies with people, but yet didn't give her any empathy for what that person went through. She just had this disconnect and this, you know, this not me, this me but not me version, but she was never able to empathize, you know, with that person that she was inhabiting. So it was interesting that this is what it took for her to learn that lesson.
Yeah,
I wonder if that's just a shift in her perspective. Like, you know, like it's she's seen this as a curse, but like, you know, empathy is a very powerful thing in the real world, and our world would look a lot different if we could perfectly empathize with our neighbors, you know, and Sid is actually one of the few people that can live, you know, walk in another person's shoes. So
yeah,
you're framing her power that way might help her recontextualize it and
feel more empowered.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just thought the whole lesson was really good and that it's, you know, I think the importance of trying to do good and help others, even if you don't do it because it's going to make you feel better. You do it because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was just a good lesson. So I enjoyed all of that. So that's my number one.
Okay. Mine is all about the parenting lessons and viewpoint of this episode, which I think Aaron covered really well in his point. So let's move on to notes. Aaron, any notes?
I've said this is kind of a long-term bugaboo on the Bald Move side, but like me kind of like, what is with all the incest porn? you know, and I blame Game of Thrones. But like I laughed out loud when Jemaine Clement had the line, "I'm the new norm, like stepmother porn."
Oh, wasn't that Jason Mantzoukas's line?
I thought it was Jemaine Clement. Also, very surprising. I guess I shouldn't be surprised because FX kind of, you know, does this stuff from time to time. But dropping, like, there was a lot of vulgarity and super adult stuff in that particular rap, like him like slapping people with his cock and
right. That's right.
But that particular line about the stepmom porn was just like, yeah, dude, what that is? I guess it is the new norm. I don't like it.
That was
specifically underneath calling your partner daddy. Oh, was he?
Okay. Yeah, I'm the supine lupine. My libido kills son. Sunshine, moody and spicy like a fine ass toilet wine on the new norm like stepmother porn.
All right. Yeah, that does. It's like, I guess it sounds more Big Bad Wolf, but you know, Oliver was dropping some.
Yeah.
He was.
He's the one who wanted to show off his cock.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I thought that was, I mean, I didn't enjoy it. It's just something I thought was funny because, like, maybe Holly and I are on the same page club on that.
Mm-hmm. And I like how he won that rap battle was basically by saying, this is because I had a healthy upbringing, I'm loved and you're not.
Yeah. People love me and no one loves you. And that was almost ready. That's something that almost killed him, or at least he feigned it to get Cynthia's support.
Right.
I just kind of like, again, going back to the Big Bad Wolf's character, I just love how like playful in the beginning he was about, you know, have you told her about the Holocaust? What about herpes? You know, and the way he kind of like, hey, death is scary, huh? And Sid's like, nah, it's just nature. Well, yeah, but kids die too. Ooh, and parents. Just the tone of voice, it was very Mr. Rogers, and the things he was talking about was very not Mr. Rogers, I thought.
Yeah.
I really liked that that particular detail.
That guy, I'm like, he looks familiar. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything except I looked it up and he's on The Good Place, Darcy's rebound boyfriend that she created.
Yes. He's also, because he's kind of a fixture on those Michael Schur. He was in Parks and Rec, I think. Wasn't he also on The Office?
I don't know.
He was like Lady Dynamite's therapist in the different episodes of Lady Dynamite. He's just really good at playing a smug asshole.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he's nothing like that in real life.
Yeah. And then I guess the other thing we haven't talked about is the two Carries. You know, it's like, you know, it's always been an emotional when they were like rebond like this. But the sacrifice that the male Loudermilk made for the female Loudermilk. And you know, them selling all that, I thought that was good. And then again, them snatching, I thought it's like, again, third episode, from the end, people probably start dying. I feel like they've kind of foreshadowed her death several times this season, sometimes by quite literally killing her in an alternate dimension or time reality. And I was emotionally prepared to see her go, and then she won. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. So,
I thought that's he it. Was going to die when they were sitting there negotiating, or not negotiating, but talking. Okay, this is going to be necessary for me to come back into you so you can take on my wounds. For a second there, I thought, because it was such a weighty thing that they were talking about his death.
Well, and they had the moment just before, the more hopeful moment, where it all seemed lost. Like, you know, when Carrie's like, did we lose? And Carrie's like, I think so. And are we just going to vanish when he fixes things? And kind of... That little existential, hopelessness of just, you know, you truly got beat. It's like when Thanos snapped everybody, you know, it's like, how this is just bad news all around. And then there's a little bit of note of hope by the end.
Yay.
That's about all I had.
Rima?
Well, I think that was a good classic show of love and empathy right there. That, you know, I mean, if she'd really bothered to kind of look, that's perfect right there with the two Carries and how he takes on her wounds and pain, knowing very well what it's going to do to him, and it could cripple him and completely take him out of commission, but he just does it because of love. So I think that was just another quick little display of what we had in this episode, so I like that. I love Jemaine Clement. Again, it's so good to see him and Jean Smart again in these episodes, and I really just want him to give me a moral speech every day for the rest of my life. I could just, he's like the Morgan Freeman for me of just narrating things. I could listen to him all day. I think he's got a lovely voice and a lovely manner of speaking. And I would not have been disappointed if in this episode, if Oliver had given Sid the sex talk by way of singing Business Time to her. And Sid, I think that would have been really hilarious. I think that you just need to play your kids that song and throw some condoms on the bed and let just things happen. Anyway, I don't know if you guys gave too much thought about season one, episode four, Oliver's speech in the beginning, the cold open, when he talks a lot.
That's what's so,
what, yeah, when he talks about fear and empathy. So season one, episode four, he says, a great philosopher once wrote, in times of peace, the warlike man attacks himself. This is the root of all of our problems. And by this, I mean we are the root of all of our problems, our confusion, our anger, our fear of things we don't understand. Violence, in other words, is ignorance. Figure your shit out. That's my, what I'd say. There are two kinds of stories we tell our children. The first kind, once upon a time, there was a fuzzy little rabbit named Frizzy Top who went on a quantum fun adventure only to face a big setback, which he overcame through perseverance and by being adorable. This kind of story teaches empathy. Put yourself in Frizzy Top's shoes, in other words. The other kind, Oliver Anthony Bird, if you get too close to that ocean, you'll be sucked into the sea and drowned. This kind of story teaches them fear. And for the rest of their lives, these two stories compete, empathy and fear. And so I bring you tonight's play, a work in five acts about a fuzzy little bunny who got too close to the ocean and what happens next. So I thought that was I don't know, I feel like that had a lot to do kind of starting us off. We didn't quite maybe understand it at that point, mm-hmm. but I thought it was kind of leading us to where we are now. And I think it's just brilliance on Noah Hawley's part that he's got all this kind of figured out. Love the line, chlamydia is kind of like a cold except for your vagina. <That's>, that was
your bodies are weird. I think the word you're looking for is beautiful.
Yeah, quite a description for that. And that, yep, that's all I got.
Okay, we covered all mine except I'm not really sure why this time door is still there, opening and closing. Carrie says it's doing that because the time eaters are back. And I'm like, oh, and then I'm like, wait, what? Why does that have anything to do with anything? Okay, fine. It's just something we have to accept. But I didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
And I take it by your silence there.
Well, I was thinking that, like, because I had a whole bunch of, like, when it first started kind of open and closing, I thought it's just like, well, they've just finally worn it out. Like, you know, they've worn a hole through the fabric of space and time, and it's just kind of, like, flapping in the breeze there. But I guess also if, like, the time demons are all worked up, maybe that they're doing something to hold it open.
Okay. But then yeah. It closes when they go through. I think.
Well, that's
maybe they don't have the ability to open and close it themselves. Like if they get through, it just stays open, so they can get back, I guess, to the hallway.
Maybe this is because of Carrie, because like I still don't understand how David got through the time portal without his fancy wrist watch. Maybe right. This is a result of them going through with the wrist, or you know, there's also the idea that maybe. The Shadow King stuck in the time between the time was using some influence to keep this open for, you know, because I haven't moved off my theory that he's manipulating everything to his own ends.
Same.
He might need some allies to do whatever, you know, because obviously he can't be just stuck in time for the rest of us. So like maybe he's using his power and influence to keep that open. And as soon as they walk through, he's like, whoo, I can let it go.
Did anyone notice if the wrist that Sydney put the watch on so she could go through the time door was the same arm that she lost?
Oh shit, that would have been good to check, but no, I did not.
I feel like it was her left hand or left wrist that she put it on, and that's the arm that she was missing, but I'd have to go back and verify. But I feel like whenever I was noticing her putting that on, like they made an effort to really show where she was, which arm she was putting that on.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
I have to check. Yeah.
It's coming up next
two
week
more
the week after. Okay, awesome. We will take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Girl. Tonight we're going to make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. Monday night is my night to cook. Tuesday night we go and visit your mother. But Wednesday, we make sweet weekly love. It's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your after work, social, sports team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, it's all on. You lean in and whisper something sexy in my ear like,
I might go to bed now, I've got work in the morning.
I know what you're trying to say, girl. You're trying to say, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time. It's
business. It's business time. Okay, we're back. It's time for the news.
Okay, so a couple items this week in the news. First one that we have is from IndieWire. This was an interview with Jemaine Clement and Noah Hawley. They talk a little bit about the rap sequence. So we start off, I really liked that about the show, that it can almost change genre even within the episode a couple of times, Jemaine Clement said. It's always great turning up and seeing what crazy stuff they've built or the ideas that are thrown around. Whether it's David leading a jubilant dance sequence joined by inmates in an insane asylum, or squaring off with Amal Farouk in a season 2 dance battle, writer showrunner Noah Hawley is always looking for ways to incorporate music into his not your everyday superhero story. There are only so many ways you can punch someone, Clement said, so Hawley tries different things to have an original confrontation in each episode. It wasn't my plan, Hawley said. I didn't go into the script with that idea for a rap battle. I just started thinking about what that battle should be and thought, well, it's Jemaine. I would be depriving his fans and my audience of a golden opportunity if I didn't take this seriously. This particular confrontation was set up by Hawley's unique take on the episode. I always had this idea that at a certain point in the story, David fractures Sid's mind, and that we would do an episode with her as a young girl where she's nursed back to health with Jemaine and Jean Smart. But I didn't know what that meant, Hawley said. When he sat down to write the episode, Hawley said it just turned out to be this modern riff on fairy tales. But it also explores a theme prevalent in the final season, if not the series overall, about a meditation on how parenting can affect a child's life. Clement said, it's tackling a really big subject, nature versus nurture. The idea that if you had a different childhood, would you approach things differently? How would it change you? But again, because it's Legion, we want to play with it in a fun and inventive way, Hawley said. We introduce this big bad wolf character whose goal is not to eat this baby, but he wants to tell her things about the world before she's ready. He wants her to grow up too fast, basically, and ultimately we know that Jemaine is on a showdown with this character, and there has to be a conflict between them to resolve it. Enter the rap battle. Hawley wrote the lyrics for each character himself, which started as a placeholder so anyone reading the script would understand what's happening, but he soon built them into savvy, shifting lyrics that both actors ended up keeping. I assumed Jemaine might say, oh, I don't want to do that, Hawley said, but he did it, happily, and had no real complaints. I said, if you want to rewrite this at all, feel free. He changed very little, we filmed it, and it's one of my favorite things ever. Having written many televised songs, there was a different approach to this one, Clement said. I don't really take myself seriously as a musician, definitely not as a rapper, so Jason and I were both a little nervous about it. But then we came to film it. It felt a lot better than it did reading it. It was really fun. We had a day of doing that scene, and I didn't get bored with it at all. I enjoyed it every time. Clement, who didn't know he was going to be in the season until he got the call for this episode, said he hadn't watched the scene yet, but over the years he's come to enjoy Legion like everyone else, as a viewer, more than a part of it. Even arriving for the final season, which now only has 2 episodes left, he stopped asking questions about where the show was going or what the ending was, preferring to be surprised by the final cut. He says, I'm going to miss that about the show. You never knew what it would be.
You imagine, like, you know, being a fan of Legion and you get called in to, you know, participate in this one episode and they're like, all right, go back home. You'll get to see what this all looks like 5 months from now. Like, what? So many more questions and answers, especially on a show like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. I would die.
Yeah.
All they'd have to do is just say, do you want to be in Legion? And I don't even care what it is. I don't care what the role is. I don't care if I'm just one of the druggies in the background smoking on something blue. I'll even suck on a pig's teat. I don't care.
I was about to ask you, would you suck on a pig's teat the size of a Volkswagen? And
yes.
So proud of you, Remo.
Yes. 100%.
When I was on... The Walking Dead.
You were on The Walking Dead.
I was in the final scene in season 2 when all the walkers stormed Herschel's farm. Mm-hmm. And so on set, I was just sort of looking around because we hadn't seen up through the mid-season finale yet. And I'm like, Where's Jeffrey DeMunn? Where's John Bernthal?
Bad news.
Where'd everyone go?
I guess I had a little more context, and that show is not as nearly as hard to figure out as Legion. But
yeah,
I
imagine got spoiled
on a ton of shit.
Imagine if Herschel's farm was the astral plane.
Yeah, there's a giant pig. Yeah,
it was almost like the astral plane
sucking
with
on
his
teeth.
Yeah, yeah. And the RV represented your childhood.
Oh my gosh. It was almost like the astral plane with unlimited ammo for Herschel's shotgun. That's for sure.
Well, that's the new lens in which to understand The Walking Dead.
And everything
there
else.
There we go. One other quick item that we have from News 24. This was just, I didn't put the whole interview on here, but I thought this was really interesting. It was an interview with Noah Hawley on what he says about the show coming to an end. He says, "I feel good about it. I don't know how to tell a story that doesn't have an ending because so much of the meaning of the story comes from the ending. Maybe it's my training as a novelist or the idea of Fargo being a tragedy with a happy ending, but still a tragedy. And in order to make something tragic, the rules are different than straight drama. Some of it is that you have to know what the ultimate tragedy is in order to build steps into it. So looking at this, I always felt like here's the problem. You have a guy whose powers could make him very dangerous, and he meets a girl. And she has her own story and her own powers, and she's going to bend him towards goodness. But if the love story doesn't work out, then the only thing that is really holding him to this world is gone, and then his negative feelings can come out, and that's a fine enough story for me. Once you resolve that, the story is done. It's not my instinct to then come up with a new story for those characters. It's been odd enough for me to do 3 seasons. I'm just not trained to do that. But these are sort of 3 chapters of a complete story. I feel like it ends in a very satisfying way that is true to its conception."
Good. We need more of that.
I know. I love that. That's why I love him so much.
Yeah.
One of the reasons.
Miniseries are good.
Yes.
Yeah. No. It's sometimes it's come out that like Netflix kind of like sees its shows as either very short term or like no reason to go beyond 3 seasons, and some people see that as a weakness. But I'm like, that's not so bad, because I hate when people are like, "Hey, have you checked out something?" I look at it and it's on its 5th season. I'm like, well, that means I'll never watch it.
Have you seen Supernatural? What is it, like 25 seasons?
God, no.
Yeah. The only problem on Netflix is when they do that and they forget to tell the creators.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Oops.
Guess what? That was your last season. Okay, let's move on to mental notes. We just have a couple this week from John Hoskins. He writes, "What a splendid episode. I don't think the astral visit retconned Sid's childhood. I think it was a way to heal her mind. It gave her a chance to resolve her childhood trauma and prepare her for the upcoming conflict. And it gave us an excuse for an epic rap battle." Yeah, I think, like we were saying, it's maybe a little bit of both. She probably came out of the whole thing better than she went in, as far as before David messed with her. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? She ended up better than before that. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
And then there's a call from Steve Brown.
"Hello, Legion cast, Aaron, Jason, and Rima. This is Steve. And just a few notes for chapter 25. I love Jason Mendzu because he's one of my favorites as the wolf. That was great. And the whole fairy tale life was interesting, that Oliver found Sid, in the astral plane. And basically the assumption I have anyway is that he changed everything just so he could get her where she needed to be, to go back. And loved the stop fighting from Carrie, and then female Carrie saying, that's like me saying, stop nerding." I laughed at that. And just loved the return of Jemaine Clement and Gene Smart. That was, it was so great. Even though this might be their only episode, but still, it was really, really cool to see them back. And absolutely broke my heart seeing Carrie and Carrie when they switched places and he had to take on her injuries. And there was some question, I don't know if last week or previously, there were some questions about Amber Midthunder's acting, but man, it was really good in that scene there, I thought. So just my thoughts. Talk to you later. 2 more things before I forget. Do you think the line from Oliver about not everyone wants to be saved? Do you think that's some foreshadowing to David's fate at the end of the series?
Yeah.
Also, did you see the commercials for American Horror Story 1984? Man, I haven't watched that show in several seasons because it just got too gory for me. But I'm intrigued about this new season and may at least tune in September to see what it's like. Talk to you later.
I haven't seen any of those trailers, but I'm excited by the idea.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm watching it. I watch this real time with all the commercials the first time I watch it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of really... I mean, it's... So Seth and I have been covering American Horror Story since I think season 3.
Yeah.
And it's like we joke because like we're called the show Undertakers by the Bald Move community because we have a bad history of starting up a show and then it's immediately canceled. Like we did that with Penny Dreadful, mm-hmm. Banshee, True Blood. And this is the one show that we just can't use our powers to kill. In fact, it gets renewed for like 3 years at a time. We're like, God damn.
No.
But it is, it's, I don't know. It's like some seasons are good. Some seasons are bad.
Yeah.
You know, they're uneven, but it's a lot of campy fun.
It is.
And it's a lot of fun. Like you can't take it more seriously than Ryan Murphy does.
Exactly. Well, I love American Horror Story, so I'll be tuning in and I'm all about the '80s. So, you know, you know, horror slasher films, you know, from the '80s. And I think it'll be fun. Like you said, you can't take it too seriously. So I'll definitely be tuning
in. Do you guys do a show on American
no,
Horror Story?
No, we never have.
Mm-mm. Rima, we need to get you on the American Horror Story podcast.
I would love to. That would be awesome. Like I said, I'm a big fan. I've seen all of them except for, golly, what was the, The Cult. That's the one that I missed. And which is shocking because I love cults. I love hearing and whatever about cults and I'm fascinated. So it's funny how that's the one that I miss. But that'd be great. You know, I saw that commercial they had. Also, there was an Olive Garden commercial. That lasagna didn't look too bad. They kept touting that over again. I'm like, yeah, I watch the commercials too. So I watch it live. What was his other question?
Whether we thought it was foreshadowing.
The foreshadowing?
You know, I don't know. I think so, maybe. I don't think it's going to end well. But I don't know. I don't think it's going to end in a positive way. But I think that, I don't know that he'll turn away from her the way, I don't think he'll turn away from her like we saw with Cynthia, but I don't think he'll turn good. I don't know. Maybe he wants to be saved. We'll see.
My best guess is he redeems himself, but he dies, and maybe we'll understand to truly the person that doesn't want help would be the Shadow King.
Yeah.
And he's the one that ends up being, utterly, utterly destroyed, decimated, erased from the astral plane, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking the same. But you say it better.
I don't know. I don't even want to guess at this point. Two more episodes.
Yeah, we'll, it's almost out. Like it's just two more episodes left. It's you can just let it ride.
Yep.
All right, that is our show, episode 25. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email or send a voice message to us at legion@podcastica.com. You got two more chances.
And you can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check out our other shows at baldmove.com and podcastica.com.
Ooh. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
See you, everybody.
You guys like video games? Got all the cereals.
Wizard who lives in the shoe. The slick Mac Daddy from the Ice Cube. My body's quite muscular, bloodstream's corpuscular. If you step to me, fuckers, you'll be sorry, sir. Oh, yes, you'll be sorry.
Bad wolf, that's what I'm telling you. I've got a sensitive nose, that's why I'm smelling you. I'll roofie your daughter, hell, I'll roofie your son. I'm faster than a gun, so you can hide. But you can't run.
I'm an old school warlock. Slept in more bears' beds than Goldilocks. Stay away from my kid, or I'll beat you with my cock. You may be an animal, but I'm a magical mammal who can turn you into ash, and then I'll go on sabbatical. You got all of the id and none of the ego. You're all bark and no bite while I fly like an eagle.
I'm the supine lupine. My libido kills sunshine. Moody and spicy like a fine-ass toilet wine. I'm the new norm, like stepmother porn. Like a snatch and grab in a college dorm. I'm everything that's real. Like the fact that veal is really adorable baby cows who scream for their mommies when they die. Scream.
I'll take your reality and I'll break it in half. Then I'll go take a shower. Or maybe a bath. See, I'm classy, I'm elegant, like a diplomat or a delegate. I put balls off an elephant, by which I mean I'm masculine. I've got a lot of nice feminine qualities too. You could say I'm the mother of disaster, the battle master. You call yourself a wolf, you're a shitty little bastard.
I'm the Loco Lobo and your name is Beast. Here is my lamp, come take a seat. I've got a spiky erection like your daddy at bedtime, holding you tight and reading Once Upon a Hate Crime.
I'm a hepatitis outbreak at a homeless encampment. I'm realer than real, I only got bad news. Now get out of my way, cause I win and you lose.
You're scared, little boy, and you're crying boo-hoo because you know deep inside that nobody loves you. I got family and friends. I give money to charity. Every year on my birthday, people send me cards and letters. My mom and dad still write to me. Little old ladies still smile at me. Puppies aren't afraid of me. I get more hugs than hate mail, and I go to bed happy. Can you say that? You sad, sad